Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Welcome back, everyone, to Campfire Tales. Tonight's story is about a park ranger whose whole life was about the wilderness and the woods, even as a youth. Until this story. Stay tuned. You're not going to want to miss tonight's episode. If you like true and creepypasta scary stories, make sure to subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up. Now let's get spooky. Do you ever notice how many trees there are? I've heard it said that there are more trees than stars in our very galaxy. Amazing to think about, isn't it? That something as big as a star should be outnumbered by the trees in our planet in our galaxy at least. That is a lot of trees, and they are very old, aren't they? So very old. Older than us. Maybe somewhere out there is a tree older than the dinosaurs buried into a mountain, somehow having survived millions of years. I know we find fossils of trees, but what if those fossils weren't dead? It's interesting to think about that there could be a tree out there older than all of mankind's history. Do you believe that trees have thoughts? After all, trees are alive, and everything living has some kind of mind and intelligence driving it. And if so, what do they think of us? I've got a fair idea of what they think about mankind. I'm a park ranger, and this is my story. It all began when we got a call none of us had been wanting to receive. A child had gone missing. This wasn't unusual. People go missing all the time in the parks. However, how this one was unusual was how it had happened. Maxie Payton had been out with his mother on a picnic. A 13-year-old, he was a wild and rambunctious child. And if there was one thing he loved doing more than anything else, it was climbing trees. If he had only been more of a video game kid than an outdoors kind, perhaps all of this would have been avoided. You see, it was when he climbed a tree that he disappeared. His mother recounted everything in detail. They picked a nice clearing at the edge of the woods. Near a large clump of trees, Maxie could climb on as he pleased. We set up the blanket right here. Maxie wanted to climb that big pine tree. She pointed to it. I took my eyes off of him only for a moment, she sobbed. Just one moment. And when I looked back, he was... Then she was utterly broken down. The first thing we did was check out the tree in question. It was a pine tree, one of the tallest I had ever seen. Clearly, it was very old. How high was he up when he had vanished? I asked the mother. A little skeptical a kid could just disappear without a trace while climbing a tree. He was... like halfway up. Then she continued sobbing. After that, it was obvious we weren't going to get anything else out of her. Still, I walked around that tree twice and I could clearly see the snapped branches and twigs where Maxie had climbed up. And they did indeed end about halfway up. It was like he had just stopped climbing then disappeared completely. We did a thorough search of the area and found nothing. Well, almost nothing. See, about 50 yards from the pine tree, I found a shoe covered in pine needles and tree sap. It was red and blue, a Nike brand symbol on the side. It seemed to have been there for a while. But when I bent down and picked it up, what I found inside planted the first seed of doubt that this wasn't just a case of a woman losing track of her child. There, written in black permanent marker, was the name, Maxie Payton. So how did it get here? Maxie's mother was hysterical, and she became even more so when I brought the shoe to her.
"That's it. That's my Maxie's shoe."
She grabbed it, clutching it close to her chest as she wailed and wailed. We had to take her away. Taking the shoe from her was difficult, both physically and emotionally. That woman held the shoe to her chest like it was a baby. I'll never forget how much that woman cried as she was taken away. Sad to say, but the shoe was the only evidence we had of Maxie and where he had gone. She was escorted to the park center where she'd wait for the paramedics. We know that she wanted the help, but in her current condition, she would only just be in the way. The moment that she was out of sight, however, was when one of my partners spotted Maxie's blue shirt at the top of another pine tree, hanging from a branch by its collar, 100 yards in the opposite direction of where we had found the shoe. He swore up and down that the shirt hadn't been there when we had first looked, and did so with such conviction that none of us even doubted him, even if we wanted to. We knew we had to get that shirt down somehow. It was evidence. But then again, how had the shirt gotten up there? Unlike the pine tree that Maxie had disappeared from, this one had no sign of anyone having climbed onto it. No broken twigs and branches slightly bent from where someone had climbed up and left the shirt. There were 5 of us when we first started looking for Maxie, excluding myself. We didn't think we needed that many, because frankly, people go missing in the parks all of the time. Often, they turn up in a few hours. We had never dealt with something like this. Staring up at that shirt, covered in pine needles, I think it began to dawn on all of us that we were dealing with something we weren't trained for. We radioed for backup, and while trying to figure out how to get the shirt down, I volunteered to climb up. The very first branch I grabbed, however, broke in half instantly. In the process, scratching me along my hand, I cried out, looking at the gash across my palm. It wasn't deep, but the skin had been broken and blood was already pooling in. Groaning at the sharp pain, I clenched my hand into a fist trying to stop the bleeding. I glared stunned at the large branch, which had just snapped when I touched it. My blood was already seeping down it and towards the ground, when it dripped onto the exposed roots of the pine tree below. "Shoot," I cried, turning back around to the others while I clenched my wounded hand in my still healthy one. Park rangers always carry a first aid kit on hand, and then quickly helped me apply bandages to it, wrapping my hand in cotton.
"What happened?"
one of the other park rangers had asked me while looking at the broken branch.
"It just broke,"
I snapped back despite myself. My agitation having been cut by the tree branch when it broke was severe, but then something else dawned on me. How had that branch cut me? It broke in the grip of my hand and shouldn't have been able to move in such a way to leave a mark this painful. Inadvertently, a shiver went down my spine. I became acutely aware of how many trees were around us. Was I mistaken? Or had their number increased since we had last checked? I had to be mistaken.
"We need to split up and find Maxie," another park ranger said.
I was thankful, given it meant that I didn't have to focus on the trees anymore.
"What about the shirts?"
another said, indicating the garment at the top of the tree.
We'll come back for it later, the first one said dismissively. You know, it's strange. For the life of me, I cannot remember their names. See, I was new at the time. A rookie, really. I barely knew what I was doing at the time. I never saw any of the other park rangers involved in the search for Maxie Payton again. Most of them retired or transferred to other parks. But sometimes I wonder if we all came back to that search. We split up into three pairs, moving in a perimeter from Maxie's last known location, the Pine Tree. I was paired up with the man whose name escapes me. I just know he was Hispanic, and that's all I could remember about him. We were sent north in case Maxie or whatever was left of him had somehow gotten there. The others went east and west. If we found anything, we would just radio it in and head back. If we found a body, we had to leave it undisturbed. That was obvious, of course, but I really hoped we wouldn't find anything. Because what we had found so far just didn't sit right with me. How had a shoe gotten 50 yards from his last known location? As I thought back to the moment when I'd first found the shoe, I began playing it over and over in my head. Something was nagging me about it. "Hey, pal," said my partner. "What?" I replied. "You ever climb a tree as a kid?" I nodded. My face was beaming as I thought back to those happy days. When my partner's grimaced, however, I blinked confused. "What's wrong?" Shaking his head, my partner muttered something in Spanish under his breath before he answered. I did too, a few times, but... He stopped walking and turned to face me. One time, when I was climbing a tree, something happened. "What?" I asked, curious if this had anything to do with our current search. It was back in Mexico, before my family immigrated to the States. There was a tree in my abuelo's backyard. I climbed it every time I went over. One time, when I climbed to the very top, I was looking out over the entire land around my abuelo's house. I felt like I was king of the world. Then I saw it. "Saw what?" My partner didn't answer. He opened his mouth, paused, then slowly closed it, shaking his head. "You wouldn't believe me." "Try me," I replied. He signed then, opening his mouth to say something. When his eyes widened so large, he looked like a fish. He was looking at something behind me. Furrowing my brow, I began to turn around when he grabbed my arm in a vice-like grip. "Don't," he hissed through his clenched teeth. "Don't look." I couldn't help myself. I wish I had taken his advice. When my eyes met the blue shirt of the young boy hanging from the bottom branches of the tree with the broken branch, probably about 100 feet away. Blood was dripping from it and onto the roots below. My heart began beating in my chest so fast I thought it was going to burst. "That's impossible," I muttered, then blinked. What I saw the moment my eyes opened will forever haunt me. The tree had come closer. My partner began cursing, letting go of my arm and stumbling back. He crossed himself, saying silent prayers. "We have to go," he said with a shaking breath. "Now." I didn't argue. Instead, I began running, my partner right next to me the whole time. I didn't dare look back once, and neither did he. All thought of finding Maxie was gone. For all intents and purposes, he might as well have never existed. At that moment, all that mattered was getting away from that tree. Exhaustion caught up with us eventually, though, and we stopped, panting as we tried to catch our breaths. "Did that just happen?" I said through pain gasps of air. "Did that actually just happen?" "I don't know, amigo," said my partner. "Did you see it move?" I asked him. "No," he answered. but I saw the others moving.
What?
Their branches and leaves were moving, he answered. You hear that, right?
He nodded, and by this point, I was thoroughly done with everything, for lack of a better term. This was just too crazy.
I was watching them for a while, he continued, wondering why they were moving with no wind around. Then,
what? I asked him.
He looked me grimly in the eyes.
I saw a boy, he said. The branches moved aside, only briefly, but I saw the body of a little boy. He couldn't have been more than 13, but, amigo, we mustn't find that body.
I didn't want to ask, but the curiosity got the better of me.
Why?
Because that thing could never be called human. Not after they're finished with it.
What do you mean, finished with it?
My partner did not answer. Instead, he began praying again in a shaking voice, crossing himself over and over.
What was happening to Maxie's body? I asked myself.
He didn't answer at first. He licked his lips, and then he looked around us, eyes darting from one spot to another. When he spoke, his voice was low and shaking.
The same thing I saw in my abuelo's backyard when I was a child.
I didn't say anything on that. I just sat on a stone, leaning backwards until my partner grabbed my shoulder.
Don't, he whispered. There's a tree behind you.
We hadn't left the forest after all.
What do we do? I asked him.
I kept my eyes on his face intently, because looking anywhere else meant seeing the tree.
Ignore them, he answered firmly. They might leave us alone if we do.
So we did. We just sat on the ground facing each other, catching our breath. I could hear the singing of a bird, and also the flow of a stream nearby. But the only thing that I could pay attention to was the sound that the tree made. The soft creaking of wood, the swaying of leaves and branches on this windless day. The trees brushed against each other. Neither of us said anything. Just looked at the ground to avoid the awkwardness of staring at each other's faces for God knows how long. The silence between us was marked by our tense patience. Something was going to happen. We could both feel it. Even after running from that thing for God knows how long, I didn't believe we had truly escaped it. It was still out there, waiting, just like us. I've heard stories about how some hunters catch their prey. They shot it first, critically wounding it. Then this followed the trail it leaves behind, waiting for it to collapse from exhaustion. Why bother letting it put up another struggle when you could just wait it out? I remembered those stories when I looked at my hand. The cotton around my palm was soaked in crimson red.
Why is this happening?
I asked my companion. He said nothing, just stared at the ground. I had never heard of this before, I continued, my voice dull and tired. I've heard stories of Bigfoot, Mothman, even frickin' Dogman in Michigan. Some people say they've seen aliens, others goblins and fairies, and they always say that they see them in the woods, peeking around a corner, watching them, hiding behind something like a rock or a... I couldn't say it. Because they were all around us, listening. But I've never heard of anyone being hunted by a tree. When I said that, I don't know why I did. I guessed accepting the reality of what had happened would make it easier. It didn't. Because when my partner looked up at me suddenly, I could see it in his eyes. He was disappointed in me. I was talking in the presence of other trees. I didn't care. This was just too weird. Any rational part of my brain was long since dead, unable to deal with how bizarre this was.
I wondered if my partner was going through the same thing. Then again, he claimed to have experienced this thing before.
Are you sure they're trees? I said slowly, like he was talking to a child.
What? I answered. His eyes narrowed. My father once told me a story. It was about a demon possessing a woman he knew as a child. He said she went stark raving mad, biting people and scratching her face. When he finished, I couldn't help but wonder if demons only possessed people.
Are you saying a demon had possessed a tree and it's hunting us?
Maybe, he answered. Who knows? I mean, how do we even know if that thing was a tree?
Looked like one to me, I replied, trying not to peek over my shoulder to see if it was behind me.
But trees don't move that fast, and they don't carry around pieces of clothing. They don't chase people.
You said you saw them with a boy's body, I pointed out.
My partner swallowed, crossing himself.
I did. I wish I hadn't, but I did. And let me tell you, amigo, trees aren't capable of doing what was happening to that boy.
I didn't say anything. The sun broke through the leafy canopy above us, and I squinted from the glare. So did my partner. Part of me thought he made a compelling case, but another felt like there was something we were missing.
Missing.
That was it. When a tree falls, I said, and no one is around, what sound does it make? My partner furrowed his brow, confused.
How do we know trees don't chase people down? How do we know they can't move in the blink of an eye or take a young boy without anyone noticing and carrying his body away?
What are you saying? The trees are capable of doing that?
Maybe they are, I replied. Maybe we aren't the first to have seen them either.
You think there might be others?
When you were a child, you saw something in your grandfather's backyard, right? Something involving trees. Through the sun's glare, I could see his face got pale. Maybe you were one of the lucky few to see to live to tell the tale.
What? He asked, mouth hanging open.
When a person goes missing in the savannah, some people believe they were killed by the local wildlife, and nobody doubts that. Africa is full of dangerous beasts. I let that sink in, let my partner begin to understand what I was going to say before I finished. When a person goes missing in the forest, sometimes people assume they were killed by the local wildlife. Mountain lions, bears, wolves, but no one ever stops and thinks about the trees all around us.
Because nobody ever notices them.
I pressed my lips together when I finished. My partner looked at me in disbelief and horror, dumbfounded.
Do you have any proof? He said slowly.
Same amount of proof as you for the demons possessing trees. Only a theory.
Then my partner's face brightened with a dark realization.
What if we're both wrong?
I blinked. My mind began racing with possibilities.
What if we're both wrong? What if this wasn't trees or demons, but something else entirely?
If it was, then what is after us? I was about to say something when I noticed it. The shadow that had fallen between us. Perfectly still on the ground. Like a border keeping us apart, a long, thick, black line. One with several appendages sticking outwards from it. My heart skipped a beat as my eyes widened. I knew my partner saw it and he cursed, screaming and backing away. However, there was one part of the shadow which made my blood run cold. One of the appendages was broken. And from it hung a silhouette of a shirt. And slowly, very slowly, it was getting bigger. Unable to help myself, I began following the shadow's trail to its source, knowing full well what had made it. I could just see it in my peripheral vision, like a patient hunter waiting for its prey to roll over and die, when I heard the most comforting sound in my life. The distant hum of a car speeding down the road, passing us by.
I turned back to my partner, locking eyes with him. At that moment, we both had the same idea. It was our only chance of getting out of this nightmare. Neither of us knew if it would work, but we didn't have a choice, because the shadow had nearly doubled in size, and a tree was creaking very loudly. We ran, faster than I ever have before or since. We ignored everything around us, especially the silent trees. We ran across their roots, pushing through their leaves, ducking under their branches, swerved in a void running into their trunks. I didn't care if I touched them anymore. If I was fast enough, I could get away from them. Then, they could not catch me. But what about the infernal creaking? They were right on our heels. What would happen when it stopped? We couldn't be near it when that happened. Our very lives depended on it. So caught up of sprinting out of the godforsaken trees, I didn't think to look at my path. My foot hit something large and solid and I cried out, losing my balance. My partner was in front of me and looked over his shoulder, bewildered. He stopped and reached out with his arms. I grabbed onto them and planted my foot back on the ground, pushing myself forward. Both of us kept running. We didn't need to check what I had tripped on. It was bound to happen at some point. We had been running over them for ages. When we saw the gray asphalt of the road, my heart leaped for joy. The creaking behind us had become distant, growing fainter and fainter. I knew damn well we were safe the moment we had reached the road, and that I felt something brush against my back, something that I knew all too well. The hard, rigid texture of tree bark. The next thing I knew, I was laying on my back against the burning asphalt, panting as I caught my breath. My partner was bent over me, his face obscuring the sun. There were tears running down his face.
"I saw it touch you," he said to me, weeping. "It was so close, amigo. So close. I've never seen anyone run as fast as you did. We're safe now," he began murmuring. "We're safe. Praise the Lord, we're safe."
I didn't say anything, just grunted as I pushed myself off the asphalt. I didn't remember even setting foot onto it. My body ached and my lungs demanded oxygen, which I was only too eager to provide. I looked back at the woods we had come out of, marked by broken twigs and foliage. Pressed into the ground was the spot that we had bursted from and onto the asphalt. Beyond it, I only saw trees, and not a single blue speck anywhere. I smiled, relieved, and stood up, glancing to the other side of the road. And my smile faded when I saw the blue shirt laying at the edge of it. The inside of the collar was facing me, and on the white tag was a name written in black marker. Maxi Payton. I blinked, and it was gone. I didn't tell my partner. He thought we were safe. Why should I take that away from him? Instead, both of us went back to the ranger station, tired, thirsty, and starving. The other pairs had already beaten us back to the station. When we arrived, they had been trying to work the radio, but stopped when they saw us coming in. Nothing happened to them. They didn't find anything either. They didn't ask where we had been for the past 3 hours. They knew better than to do that. Nobody ever tried in the days that followed either. We didn't tell anyone what had happened. Some things are better left forgotten. A couple of weeks later, my partner resigned. He cited intense emotional trauma as his reason. I did the same thing 3 months later. I didn't keep in contact with him. He didn't try to. Instead, I moved to the city, surrounded by buildings and cars and the modern world. I avoid the parks, botanical gardens, anywhere a single tree is. I stay away from it. I've always believed it was the only way to keep myself safe. I do enjoy going to the park my apartment overlooks. Why? Because there's no trees there. Only grass and bushes. That is, until
I'm not sure what to do anymore. Because I had a dream last night. There was a pine tree in my apartment, and one of the lower branches is broken. I thought it was just a symptom of my trauma. But later, I saw a tree in the park. And I swear, it's getting closer. Well, I hope that you guys enjoyed the creepy story tonight. If you did, please make sure to like, comment, and subscribe. It really helps the channel a lot to grow as quickly as possible. And like always, spread me like butter. Yeah. Oh yeah. Have a good night, and stay spooky.